Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today with Tim Weil, he is the chair of Denver IEEE Communication Society and has been an IT professional for quite a few years. I forget the number he mentioned. But Tim, welcome today. Thanks for joining.
Good to be here, Chris.
Definitely. So Tim and I met at an IEEE event for blockchain and transactive energy. So his background across the board is, you know, the root of trust, the IoT, and then moving now into blockchain. But Tim, tell us where you came from and how you got to this point.
Okay, I got a little bio somebody wrote for me one time. I like it. It says, I'm living out my high school mad science dream with a long career in IT and communication industry. I was an early adapter of build your own Heathkit computers in 1980, Chris. And I did that behind IBM on the Diagonal out in Longmont. Mm-hmm. And I've had a 40-year ride in the digital transformation business with many interesting sidelines along the way. My background before I'm even in IT is I'm a bilingual inner city school teacher. So yo estoy hablando español, estudiantes que no comprenden inglés. All right, so that's enough of the bilingual piece. But I come back from a humanities front end and a very solid technology back end. And the conversations you and I are having, fantastic to be zooming into your podcast, is about really challenges the industry are facing right now. We had a great seminar with IEEE and Blockframe and our partners on the use in transactive energy. I'm actually in my IEEE role, part of a program of blockchain for communications, Chris. So there's some intersection with your own competencies and just talking about the challenges of this new age. So much information and so many things to protect,
huh? You know, and the interesting thing you mentioned that you didn't say, well, I was waiting for you to say it, stand-up comic. So you do dinner theater, stand-up comics. Give us a quick story, something you shoot to the audience.
Well, I did one the other day on Starbucks. Okay, this was like a little satire we had to write, and it was about a woman who was a barista, okay? And so the piece that I wrote about her daily work, which applies to what we're doing, it was called The Daily Grind. This is a barista working at Starbucks, right? And I would say that Susie Q woke up Saturday morning feeling pressed, not depressed, repressed, oppressed, or compressed, just pressed. After Friday night's wing-ding party, Prince is gone, so let's dance. She struggled to get out of bed with all her willpower to get dressed and off to work, fumbling with that pink thing to dial into the daily grind.
Oh, so you do a lot of stories, huh, in acting out, and you said you and your wife do this, right?
We do. She's an author. She's has a couple of books out. Her books are Karmafornia, about the Bay Area in the mid-1970s, relationships and such, and another great local area book called Super Ball.
Super Ball. You got to give me 20 seconds on that.
Well, just understand that the guy's name is Norman Stingley, and he was an inventor who came up with, I'm not kidding, Silly Putty, the Frisbee, and Super Bowl. Now, if you had to have a technology legend or trademark to your name, that's pretty good, isn't it?
You know, I would probably say that that probably made more money than any technology person ever will, or other than a Bill Gates or something, right?
And just to show you the intersection with technology, I'm actually sponsoring a call for paper on IT resilience in the communications space. And when I gave a little pitch at my IEEE conference in December called Globecom, I took a Super Bowl with me. I said, well, listen, here's all the IT propeller head stuff. Now I'll give you a real demonstration. I showed them how well a Super Bowl can bounce.
All right. Well, let's take a break here. We're going to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Tim Well, the chair of the Denver IEEE Communication Society. And Tim, it was great to hear kind of some of your story and background. Let's talk now about what it is that you do with the IEEE there and in Denver and what's going on with the chapter.
Very good. So I've been with the Denver chapter program now for 10 years, Denver section program 10 years, Chris. In my professional career, IEEE has been a shadow career over 25 years. I've gone in and out of this company and that technology, but I've been an IEEE member with Communication Society for 25 years. I sit today on a national board for chapter chairs across the U.S., and my role is to develop distinguished lecture and distinguished speaker programs to come into our markets here in Colorado. We've brought in Ashutosh Dutta and Anthony Chen in the last couple of years. We've given distinguished lectures, talks at CU Boulder in the areas of 5G. But that's just one topic in our roster of very distinguished speakers. On the local level, I have served as the chair of the Denver section and moved over to help restart the Communication Society because it's such a vital fabric in our industry. We do professional talks, we do company tours, and we solicit papers for publications that I help manage. I'm the editor on the IEEE IT Professional magazine now for 5 years, and we are sponsoring, as I mentioned, Call for Papers. So one foot in industry, one foot in academia, and one foot zooming into a podcast.
So, you know, and I thought of it whenever you started talking about IEEE. Some people might not be familiar with that organization. Can you give us kind of the background on the organization itself?
Sure. So IEEE is the oldest engineering, largest engineering society in the world. I think our membership is roughly 400,000 members on every continent. We have programs in every engineering technical field, aerospace, nanomedicine and biology, signal processing, computer society, power engineering. We have a whole roster. The banner says, go to the website IEEE-denver.org. My site is comsoc.IEEEDenver.org. So as a society going back for over 125 years, we have people like Marconi. We have people like Alexander Graham Bell. We have people like Vint Cerf today, or Anthony Viterbi at USC, who have been the giants in the industry, who have really paved the way for businesses and the communities that you and I get networked with today. IEEE is often looked at as the standards body for things like Wi-Fi, Ethernet, cybersecurity, power engineering. So if we're not a brand name, we've done a really good job of promoting our business with such a low profile.
Yeah. I didn't know that IEEE had been around that long. I've been a member since I went back to college, 20 plus years ago. I didn't know it had been Alexander Graham Bell, huh? I didn't know that. You had mentioned when we were talking before and we met a couple weeks ago that your background in IoT security, Internet of Things. When you're looking at an electrical engineer and somebody that does designs, what does it mean to secure an IoT device?
Oh, that's a great question, Chris. Let me just talk about my company. My company is in the electronic monitoring business. We are alcohol monitoring systems, and we are a service provider to the corrections and law enforcement and rehabilitation industries. We have roughly 30,000 bracelets deployed operationally in the field for problems ranging from remote breath to alcohol abuse to actually location tracking and law enforcement. We are not the enforcing bodies. We are the service providers, manufacturing the hardware, providing the analytics software, the customer services to support agencies in dozens of states, okay? So it's a classic IoT problem. You have a remote endpoint on the end of a physical body being managed through cellular networks with data analytics on the back end and customers wanting real-time information about signals and alerts. I just use that because it's kind of been a testbed model for, you know, the theoretical pie in the sky, Ivy White, white towers, if you would, and makes you think more about where things break in the firmware, in the organizations of people supporting the diversity of reflective devices, phone calls to customers, and data analytics. It creates a whole fabric. And so one has to get familiar and comfortable with the fabric to have an intelligent conversation with an adult like yourself.
So the IoT devices in your, what we were talking about is worn by someone involuntarily. Is that what I'm understanding?
In this case, they're under court order, yes.
And then that is tracked by the state or by some kind of correctional agency that needs to monitor them, keep track of where they're at and stuff.
Yes, sir.
And whether they've been drinking or not. Is that the other part of it?
Well, one population are people with alcohol substance abuse, yeah.
So it's kind of like the ankle bracelet or whatever that criminals get fitted with and they can't leave their house or whatever.
Yeah, going back to the Comedy Channel, I usually start this by telling people I'm in the jewelry business.
Involuntary jewelry. Okay, so...
I just mentioned that as a classic offender management bracelet endpoint technology. It's just a model of IoT stuff. In the areas in which I also engage, we talk about the smart city. We talk about the intelligent transportation systems. We talk about health tech. So there are very many different overlays, as you well know, about trying to protect anonymized reflector, low power, low latency devices in broad enterprise networks, right? A lot of challenges just by the problem set we are given.
Yeah, so, and I interesting that you chose, because the ankle thing bracelet really interests me, because in security, you're looking at securing the device itself so that the criminal couldn't go in there and tamper with it, would be the first stage, right? And then securing the communication back and saying, hey, this is actually our device, we can talk to it. And then securing the data, that the data coming from it is accurate because you're affecting somebody's freedom, somebody's life with that reading data. And then maybe even that somebody at the judicial department didn't tamper with it or accidentally get changed or lose it.
Correct. And as you talk about those segments, Chris, each one of them is almost their own domain. And that is one of the problems that we as technologists face, which is you have different stakeholders. You know, this is a department who gives court testimony. This is a department that manufactures firmware. This is a bunch of programmers who run software. And so having to get an end-to-end picture of the service you're delivering is really very challenging. And that's really where my ISO 27001 conversation comes in, which is talking about securing the whole enterprise approach in a compliance framework, right? Mm-hmm. And as my ops people will say every day of the week, you want me to shoot you now? Compliance is not security.
Yeah.
And I go, doesn't matter. I got Kevlar vests. Your bullets will bounce off.
Interesting. Well, let's take a break here from our sponsor. We'll be right back. I wanted to explore that topic a little bit more.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Tim Wow, the chair of the Denver IEEE Communication Society. Before the break, we were talking about a unique application that gave us some different segments of security. And you said when you looked at that whole picture, you called it the enterprise security. Now, I have heard many people in that type of segment that would call that product security. Because enterprise would be more of the data produced on a network to do business operations. So what do you think about that classification? Are you more of a, you know, you're looking at that as a product security, or where does that boundary kind of happen?
Well, I think you hit the one problem space nail on the head, so to speak. I don't care if you're like securing water systems, airplanes, military bases, whatever your problem set is, the conversation always starts off about what information are you protecting, right? So the protection of information can be defined by your silo of expertise and not like by necessarily the company's overall understanding of, hey, we're a service provider in a regulated business. And by our labeling as a cloud service provider and not a cloud service consumer, we have to look at privacy protection of the data which is being offered and consumed. And the privacy protection might be in the role of who is the creator of the data, who is the custodian, who is the protector or processor of the data. We are a data processor. So, you know, you're running back-end data centers. You have millions of alerts. Your job is to protect that the information doesn't get in the wrong hands, that you are following regulatory guidelines, and that when there is a problem, as we all know, breaches are a part of everyday life, you are organizationally structured to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, generic roadmap for anything that we do, right? So if we had a problem with the firmware, on the one hand, we have all these people calling the customers to say, you know, we have to do an upload on the bracelet. So you're going to have X amount of outage time when the IoT device is not going to be working, right? And then if the analytics guys say, well, you know, the delay on your firmware affected my ability to talk to, service buses in a cloud operation, everybody sees a different part of the elephant, right? And so the idea is to try to have a unified view, which is where the enterprise security risk approach takes place. Yeah.
Interesting. You know, and oftentimes when we look at IoT devices or critical infrastructure devices, you get a device that's being turned on and off, operating electromechanical operations where you're actually reading data on your bracelet. But the example of where we were talking the other day, and I think I want to get you to talk about, in transactive energy, that part where we're saying we're controlling energy infrastructure and not just reading data usage, but turning it on and turning it off. So now the data is really on or off. We don't care as much about the data, but we care more about that it got there through a trusted means. The operation was done in a timely, trusted manner, and we know for sure that it happened. So more of an assurance of the operation for electromechanical.
Right, which is a fascinating space, and you and I in a few minutes won't cover the whole gamut there. Where I've worked with energy, Chris, is, again, IEEE organizational leader. I actually chaired the 2013 renewable energy show that we did in South Denver. We will have this show here again in 2021, okay? It's called Green Tech. And I met the power guys, I met the NREL guys. And I ended up being asked to be an evaluator for University of Denver's summer program in renewable energy. They bring in 10 super bright undergrads, and they all do poster sessions and write topics in the energy and renewable space. So my job, cybersecurity, is say, let's talk about when things go really wrong. So I gave two talks last summer. One was on the Murray botnet, which, if you know the story of, browned out a good portion of internet service by taking out a DNS service provider named DYN. Okay, so Murray, M-I-R-A-I, happens maybe back in 2015 or thereabouts, and you had over 40,000 reflectors. We're talking about DVRs and CCTVs pointing from 147 companies at the servers. It was a distributed denial of service attack. The other one that I talk about in my lecture is the advanced persistent threat attacks on the Ukraine grid, when we're talking about nation states now arguing over shale rights. So energy and cybersecurity go hand in hand. And you and I were having a get to know each other talk about transactive security. And I'm still actually, you know, I'm still in a listening mode a little bit, because the power guys there were very advanced. And I'm catching up with, well, what's my value proposition looking at what we're doing? I was very impressed, I have to say, with companies like EnergyIO and Blockframe for the ways in which they were tackling the problem. And I really want to get into a longer conversation with that community to just look at short-term objectives, standardization, productization, and the abilities to be effective in the energy distribution for transactive systems.
Yeah, quite a few years ago, I was involved with early stages of what I, transactive energy, with the Gridwise Architectural Council, I believe is the name of it. That was a group that was parallel to what we were doing at NIST and the SGIP at the time. And they put together all kinds of great models about how to have everybody in the grid having smart energy production. And everybody saying, here's how much power I'm adding to the grid. Here's how much I absorb from the grid on a minute, second basis, you know, across a microgrid. But then they lost kind of, you know, the theory was good, but then we lost the ability to really do it, because if somebody just said they were producing power, how do we determine, yes, I'm going to pay them? And anybody could do that. So kind of the spoofers could just say, yeah, pay me money. I'm giving you power. I'm giving you power. And it kind of killed transactive energy for quite a few years. And I still haven't seen that overarching solution. And we were talking about that the other day. Is there yet? Or, you know, maybe it's just emerging in some cutting edge technology.
Well, in IEEE, though, in my life, we talk a lot about things that are possible and then things that actually happen, right? So just to have the confluence of those communities talk to each other is very healthy and beneficial. And we had a very good 100+ turnout for our 2-day program, right? So conversation isn't solely focused there. That happened to be the last one that you and I engaged in. On a larger level, IEEE is leading that standards work, if I get the number right, is it 2438, where they are, in fact, have maybe 10 different working groups in blockchain systems. And I think you know, they've done 2 international conferences. This is going to be their 3rd this year. And I was very interested to see a woman's name. Her name is Elise Bertino, associated to this year's blockchain conference, because Elise Bertino is a professor at Purdue, who is one of the smartest access control people on the planet. And she goes back to the role-based access control stuff that I also have in my dustbin of technology, you know? So one of the questions about IEEE and why we're of value is because we have a very long continuity. We can see things that seem hot and are getting a lot of airtime today, and then do sort of an objective view about what problems are going to solve long term. And that's a lot of what I see us doing with our blockchain and transactive energy conversation today.
Yeah, so do you see that you've probably seen some more technologies in your time than I have that that come and go and come and stay. What do you see as for those two technologies? What's your thoughts on the future?
Well, so blockchain, I got a very good view. I'm actually positive on both of them, and I'll tell you why. One is, I think blockchain, although it's in a lot of contexts is looked at as a solution in search of a problem, which is that, you know, we want more trust in our networks. We want stronger, authenticated, verified, auditable, forensic trails of e-commerce. You can go back to EDI, Electronic Data Interchange. We were doing that with X.45, okay? So we're always looking to improve the trust fabric of networks. On the transactive energy side, I have a friend. I've known him for 30 years. His name is Dr. Sam Baldwin. He is the CTO of the Department of Energy. He is the leading expert on renewable energies of anybody I've ever known. And the energy market goes up and down. I'm no person who really understands all that. But when they showed us the models and they showed us, you know, here's your nuclear delivery, here's your oil, gas delivery, here's your renewable energy delivery, you got a much more sense of sort of that layer of business that we are all sort of mining for. And so in technology like Spectrum, that becomes kind of like a gold rush syndrome or, Oklahoma land rush. Let's all just jump in there, carve out a piece and see if it's sustainable.
Yeah.
Stop. There you go. Short story.
Okay. So we're kind of reaching the end of the time we usually set aside, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to reach out and say, here's things I do. People need help with these. Sir, here's our services. Here's how you can connect with me. Go ahead and give a shout out for anything that you need help with or that IEEE would like to have people engage with.
Good. So I have two hats that are very specific there. One is I am a consultant in the enterprise risk management space. My company is Security Feeds. Website is securityfeeds.com. And my expertise is in large-scale compliance, audit and compliance work. That's federal, commercial, ISO 27001, specific industry silos as well. The other side is IEEE, the professional who runs programs. We will be bringing a workshop, Chris, on blockchain for communications technologies, probably in April, somewhere in the Denver area. So I'll keep your folks informed about that. And look for our publications, IEEE Computer, IT Professional, couple of the best magazines in the business. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining today, Tim. It's definitely been a pleasure, and we look forward to syncing up with you more in the future.
It's a pleasure to be here with New Cyber Frontier. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.